This is America on the Road, named Best Radio Show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 29th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Is your car spying on you? A California agency charged with policing privacy issues thinks it might be. And we'll have the details a little later in this segment. I think, Chris, you have your own suspicions on that. Despite reports that electric vehicle sales are leveling off, Ford has just ramped up the production of its F-150 Lightning battery electric pickup truck, and I mean big time. We'll have the details and our comments on that. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, YourTestDriver.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and, of course, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury. So imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at drivingtoday.com/auto insurance. That's drivingtoday.com/auto-insurance. Don't write out hyphen, just use a hyphen. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. He's editor of yourtestdriver.com. Chris, what's been going on in your world over the course of last week?
Whole lot of summer, Jack. Got to the lake, had some time on the boat. Not my boat. I'm not nice enough to own one, but had a lot of fun here. How about you?
Yeah, it's been a good summer. You know, I'm kind of between vacations here. I'm headed off to Europe a little later in the month, and we'll do that. I hadn't been there in a long time since before COVID hit, so it'll be interesting to see what Europe is like these days. As you longtime listeners know, Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. Each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can save some money on your automotive purchases. Of course, we review a couple of vehicles each week, too. We love doing that. Coming up a little later, Lexus has pulled the wraps off a plug-in hybrid version of its most popular vehicle. We'll have all the details on that. And Maserati has announced the name of its most powerful car ever. The only issue is you're not allowed to drive it on the street. We just had a chance to drive the all-new 7th-generation Ford Mustang, of course, and that also gave us the chance to interview Mustang brand manager Jim Owens. I always like talking to Jim. Very enthusiastic guy about Mustang. He knows as much about the new Mustang as probably anyone on the planet, so I'm sure you'll enjoy our discussion with him coming up later in the show. And, of course, reviewing cars is one of the things we do best. Chris, what vehicle are you going to be talking about this week?
My family and I spent the week in the Kia EV6 GT. That's a 2023 model. It's super quick, and I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Yeah, a rocket ship. And I'm curious about the reaction of the Teague daughters to that vehicle, among other things. Of course, your wife's reaction. And your reaction, of course, is key because you're the automotive expert. But it's also good to have the civilian point of view, isn't it?
Yeah, especially with families, right? Because they buy the car as much as you do, or as much as I do.
Yeah, and you're in it, and they're in it with you, in it for the long haul. I had a chance to drive the newest version of one of the vehicles that kicked off the crossover craze. Whether that's a good thing or not, we can debate, but it is true. I'm going to tell you all about the 2023 Subaru Outback Touring. It's coming up a little later in the show, but let's dive into the news. This issue about, is your car spying on you? There is, I live in California, at least most of the time, and there is an agency here that I had never heard of. It's called the California Privacy Protection Agency, and it has an enforcement division that's looking at auto manufacturers, about vehicles who do things like location sharing, web-based entertainment, smartphone integration, cameras, all the stuff that modern cars have that we talk about every week, but are presenting potentially some privacy concerns. What are your thoughts on that, Chris? I bet you have some.
I do. And you know, it's funny. Some of the cars that I get into tests, and you probably noticed this too, some of them have a privacy policy. When you start the car, it tells you data collection is on. You can turn it off if you don't want it. You know, here's what's happening. But I think a lot of people just blow past that without thinking about it. But there's a lot of information that flows out of your vehicle, either to the automakers or wherever it's going to their data centers these days. And they're doing that so that they can judge, you know, how you're driving, how you're using the vehicle. They try to, you know, build some insights on that so that they can either market to you or build a better vehicle. But at the same time, they do have a lot of that information there. So, yeah, I mean, spying might be a strong word, though.
Well, I'll tell you, if you've got a camera pointed directly at the driver and it's on all the time and they're looking at you, I've got to think, and they're capturing that information and keeping it, that's kind of spying to me. I mean, it might sound silly, but I think there's something to this. And you know, I'm not necessarily a guy, as you know well know, Chris, all for government interference or government overlook on things. But I do have privacy concerns, and I'm wondering where that stuff is going to go. And I think a lot of people hop in the car. They don't realize that their car might be taking video of people just wandering right by their car, you know, while it's just sitting there.
Yeah, I think the camera question is a little bit more sensitive for me. I was thinking more of just driving data and collection, but yeah, the camera thing does worry me a little bit. And you know, I've heard stories of people having warranty issues because the car collected data on them driving it in a way that was not responsible or within the realm of the warranty. So I think there are a lot of concerns here, but it's only going to get more concerning, I guess, over time, because everything is more connected, as you know. So
yeah, well, there's a ton of data that can be collected. Apparently a lot of it is being collected and saved. They went after Tesla a little bit for just keeping information and keeping video of people, again, walking by Teslas parked on the street. I mean, that's a little out there.
Yeah, that is a little bit heavy-handed, I'll say.
Well, let's dive into this thing about Ford and the F-150 Lightning. I think it's a pickup truck that both you and I like a whole bunch. They're essentially tripling their ability to make these vehicles after shutting down their Rouge plant and refurbishing it and then bringing it up to speed to make 150,000 units a year in this factory.
I feel like it's about time. You know, these trucks have been in super short supply since day one. And, you know, today you could probably go to a dealer's lot and find one, but it may be a little bit marked up because they know that's the only one in town or the only one nearby. So I think it's welcome news for buyers. I mean, the truck isn't really getting significantly cheaper as a result of this. I mean, they did drop the price a little bit, but this is still a pricey truck.
Yeah, it's a pricey truck, but the drop in price has prompted a lot of interest in the vehicle. I mean, I think there were like a sixfold increase in the number of people visiting on the web. You know, when you hear a price drop, you go, okay, what is the price drop? And click, 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 click. It's also going to make trim levels, like kind of mid lower levels, like the XLT, much more available. And I think that's great. I mean, to have lower, less expensive trim levels out there in the wild and able to be purchased, that's a big advantage, I think.
Yeah, when you're looking at, what is it, the Limited or the Platinum trim, I think it is, that's over $90,000 to start. So that's pretty limiting for a lot of buyers. But I do agree, you know, the XLT is kind of the sweet spot of both the gas and I think the Lightning line. So hopefully they can get online and lower the price even more, but I don't know, maybe wishful thinking.
Yeah, well, another piece of good news is a lot of people being employed building these trucks. About 1,200 additional manufacturing employees are being trained, so like to see that employment. It's kind of interesting that they're doing this when, you know, a lot of the buzz has been electric vehicle sales are slowing, or they're not at least gaining as much as many manufacturers would hope.
Yeah, Ford even came out the other day and said, you know, hey, we're not going to stop building hybrids. We're actually going to build more hybrids because we think that's what people really want instead of, you know, only selling EVs. At the same time, I think, you know, it's a great development for them. They've invested, I don't know how many billions of dollars in new facilities in Tennessee and Kentucky, and then the Rouge factory where they're building the F-150 Lightning is so they've got a lot of money tied up here. I guess, you know, the stopping the ball rolling might be more expensive than it's worth at this point in time, even though it is getting quite costly.
Right. Well, you talk about hybrids, and it was prescient because we're going to be talking about the Lexus RX 450H Plus, which is the plug-in hybrid version, first plug-in hybrid version of the RX ever. I'm kind of scratching my head wondering why it has taken so long to make that happen. But I think that's an encouraging sign, even though plug-in hybrids don't seem to be jumping off the shelves and there's not tons of talk about them. I bet you're happy about this, aren't you?
I am. I think, I came around to Toyota's approach a while ago. I think the multi-prong sort of jump into electrification is the way to go. And so Toyota's been doing that with hybrids and plug-in hybrids. And they do them just about as well as, if not better than anybody else. And I think for a three-row SUV, a plug-in hybrid's a great pairing. You get the all-electric range. And then you get like a normal hybrid operation after that. And it can really save some fuel for what would normally be a little bit thirstier of a vehicle.
You're going to get something like 35 miles of all-electric range, which is pretty decent. I kind of wish for a little bit more. Maybe it's because of where I drive, and everything seems distant from me where I need to go. But that's pretty good. 83 mpge, so miles per gallon equivalent rating. Not through the roof, but pretty darn good, I guess. Certainly when you're comparing that to what an MPG rating would be for a combined rating. That's way in advance of that. So, and this is their 800-pound gorilla.
I think they'll sell everyone they can make.
It's going to be out there by the end of this year, so I think pretty exciting. And quickly, we should put out the name of this Maserati vehicle that has just been announced. At least the name has been announced, I think, at Monterey Car Week, which is coming up in a couple of weeks or so, a week and a half or so. We're going to see even more, but the name of the Maserati that is the most powerful and extraordinary track-only car, according to Maserati, they've ever built, is the MC Extrema. You like it?
Yeah, I mean, these sorts of things, I don't pay a lot of attention to them because they're very expensive and they're only for a single use. You can only, you know, you have to have a track nearby to use them. So, but super interesting stuff. I mean, I'd love to have the opportunity to have a go in one.
Well, I can't wait to see exactly what this thing is going to look like at Monterey Car Week. And we'll see pictures and we'll hold them up to the microphone when we get them and, you know, show them on the YouTube version of this show. But pretty cool stuff. And when we come back, we have some cool stuff to road test. You are road testing a super, super quick car. I'm curious about your take on the overall handling of the Kia EV6 GT. And I was driving one of the first crossovers of all time, the Subaru Outback. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road. It is road test time with Chris Teague and Jack Nierad back with you. We're so glad you're with us. If you like the show, please pass it along to somebody who might also like the show. We would appreciate that. That would mean a lot to us. Let them know what radio station on which you listen to the show, when you listen to it, and all of that stuff. If you listen to a podcast, you can pass that along. We'd love that. And I'd love to hear what Chris Teague has to say about the 2023 Kia EV6 GT. Are your eyeballs numb from driving this thing?
I can tell you your fingertips tingle after a little bit driving it. It's amazing how quickly it accelerates. But so this is a really interesting vehicle, Jack. I talked about the Hyundai Ioniq 5, I think maybe about a month ago on the radio show, 6 weeks or so. And then before that, we talked about the Genesis GV60. And these three vehicles are relatively the same underneath, except for they have a little bit different battery and configurations for power and things like that. So really interesting vehicle. The EV6 starts at around $44,000. The GT all-wheel drive that I tested comes in the mid $60,000 range. And that is all in. You get all the options there. You don't have to buy a sunroof or add safety equipment and all this stuff. Like, that's Kia for you. Really good job. Before we get too deep into it, I will say I think that the GT is probably overkill for most people. I think 576 horsepower feels fantastic, but even in everyday driving without the sport mode on and anything, it's a little too much. So I think I would opt for like a mid-range model to get more range, I guess, at a lot less money. But Jack, have you driven the EV6, specifically the GT?
I was on the launch of the EV6 GT. Blew me away, in many, many ways. You know, really interesting car. As you say, mind-numbingly fast in a straight line. I'm not sure I would love it through the twisties, over the course of a couple hours of mountain driving. I mean, because there's a lot of weight there and it throws around its weight and you kind of feel it. It does a lot of things right, though. Highway assist, for example. It's got a lot of good stuff. I mean, I'll sum up a little bit later, because I have some thoughts on the direction I would take the EV6 purchase.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, 576 horsepower, Jack. It has an electronic limited slip differential. It's extremely firm suspension. I'm surprised at how firm this suspension is in 21-inch wheels. Despite the firmness of the suspension, Jack, as you mentioned, there is a lot of weight, and this feels like a very wide vehicle. Even though it's relatively, it's very similar to the Hyundai Ioniq 5, it feels wider, it feels larger, and is more commanding. It looks great from the outside, but inside it does feel bigger, I think, than it really is on paper. But 0 to 60, people are testing it in the low 3-second range, Jack. I will tell you, and now the difference between this car and, say, something like my Golf R, which can do 0 to 60, I think, in 3.8 seconds, is the instant torque off the line. That you feel every bit of those horsepower, every bit of the torque right off the line, and it's really thrilling. Before you know it, you're going 60, and frankly, it blows by a lot quicker than most people would ever believe. So, like you said, straight line performance here is absolutely no problem whatsoever. Inside, though, I think the cabin of this vehicle is my favorite of the three sort of corporate trio here. The GT has Alcantara seats and they're sport seats, so they're deeply bolstered. They're really deep and really nicely padded, and that fabric kind of holds you in place. I think the downside to that is that you don't get cooled or ventilated seats, I should say. You get heated seats and things like that, but you do miss some of the more luxurious features. But I think the interior is very comfortable. My kids both opted to ride in it over my Golf because it's got a larger back seat. They like the interior color scheme with the green stitching on the GT. And then also they have a lot more headroom in the back than in my Golf. These are not in the same category. I'm just giving some comparisons here. But Jack, what did you think about the GT's, the EV6 GT's interior? Did you find it as comfortable as the others?
Yeah, I like it. Of course, I do like the Genesis GV60 interior. I think that's a really nice interior as well. But of course, that's a much more expensive vehicle, so you should expect that. I think the interior is really good, and it's not too futuristic. I mean, some people might not like the Ioniq 5 interior just because it's so video gamey, others might love it for that. I think this is a more middle of the road interior that's kind of more in keeping with my personality, you know, dull.
I buy that. It is not super dull, though. It's got some nice touches. It's just very dark. I think that there's not a lot of color interaction there, but technology is great. You have a 12-inch digital gauge cluster and a 12-inch touchscreen. You've got Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. I like Kia's infotainment system. Some people think it's too simple, but for me, that makes it easier to use while you're driving. All the menus, all the icons are very clearly labeled. It's super easy to interact with. The GT gets all the safety equipment, so you've got blind spot monitoring with a camera system that shows you the sides of the vehicle when you turn the turn signal on. You've got adaptive cruise control and the whole suite here, Jack. So I think, again, the performance is thrilling. I love it. It's intoxicating, but I don't think I would need it on a daily basis, and I think the range trade-off for me would be something that I wouldn't want to swallow with this vehicle, but it is quite a thrill.
Yeah. My quick sum up is I would buy the GT line that is also pretty darn quick. I think it'll go 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds or something like that, which is pretty darn fast. And you don't spend as much and you have more range. So
my quick take. I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, I was driving one of the vehicles that started the whole crossover craze. And kind of started, I think, as a stopgap from Subaru. I'm talking about the Subaru Outback, where they were seeing SUVs go crazy and they had no platform that could possibly be like a traditional SUV. So they took this the legacy sedan or the legacy wagon, station wagon, and kind of tarted it up with off-road, you know, raised the ground clearance a bit, put some wheel flares on it, and bingo, it kind of resonated. And here we are 25 years later, and it is a staple. It is, you know, one of their most popular vehicles. And I think it's a terrific vehicle for the reasons that happened, you know, at the beginning. This is kind of half car, half SUV. It has a lot of SUV versatility to it, carrying capacity. At the same time, it handles like a car. It is much like a legacy wagon or a legacy sedan, which is just a nice, comfortable, fine driving vehicle. So I liked it a lot. Modern touches like an 11.6-inch vertical display screen. They do a nice job, I think, with their overall infotainment. So I liked it in the 2023 Outback. I wish there was a bit more horsepower. You know, I think Subarus are lagging a little bit in horsepower these days. But the base engine, of course, 182 horsepower, way lagging. You can get a 260 horsepower turbo option, which is a much better way to go. I think that's probably more than sufficient horsepower for a lot of people. And of course, then safety is another one of Subaru's hallmarks. You know, their EyeSight Advanced Driver Assist System has all kinds of stuff: adaptive cruise control, forward collision warning, automatic emergency braking, lane keeping assist. The lane keeping assist is a bit obtrusive to me. I wonder if you experience that, Chris.
Yeah, you know, we've owned a recent Subaru and I've driven all the recent Subarus, and that's the first thing I try to turn off as soon as I get in. It's a little bit too aggressive for my taste.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at keeping it between the white lines. And when I don't keep it between the white lines, it's because I want to not do that.
Exactly.
And I'm kind of okay with that. Of course, this is an all-wheel drive vehicle. Subaru is noted for all-wheel drive pretty much all the time. They have one vehicle that doesn't have all-wheel drive, but virtually all of them do. And like I say, this is a vehicle that if you are coming out of a car and want something that's more versatile, I think the Outback is a great solution there. I was driving a Touring Edition, which is toward the top of the trim level. Trim levels, not super expensive, but you know, plenty of stuff. I liked it a lot. I just think they do a lot of good things with it. So the Touring level, about $42,000 base price. This is a fairly large vehicle. It's based on a midsize sedan. It has a bunch of good stuff: heated steering wheel, ventilated seats, round view monitor, power folding mirrors. So I like the overall experience. It's not an enthusiast car. It is a comfortable car that rides well, handles well, and kind of takes me back a little bit. I like it.
I agree. Subaru does a great job at listening to its customers. They build in features that people really want to use. And for, you know, a lot of people bemoan them for being a little quirky, but I think that's what makes them so popular among the people who really love them. And more power to them. They do a good job.
Yeah. And I think more power to them in a couple of ways. If there was a little more power, it would be even better. But you know, I like this a lot. And so look at those vehicles. I mean, some pretty good stuff. I mean, the EV6 GT, wow, blow you away kind of performance. And for somebody a little bit more sedate, like Jack Nierad this past week, the Subaru Outback was just fine by me. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Mustang brand manager Jim Owens, very enthusiastic guy about Mustang. He is always enthusiastic, no matter how tired he is, no matter whether it's the beginning of the day, end of the day. He's a blast to talk to. Knows a ton about Mustang, and of course, there's a new Mustang to talk about. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back. I got this letter from a reader the other day, and I thought I'd share it with you. I'm on vacation on the beach in Key Biscayne and just finished reading Dance in the Dark. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great plot and twists I never saw coming. You're really good at creating visual images. Congrats, you made my vacation all that more enjoyable. This is just the kind of feedback an author loves to hear. I'm Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road and the author of Dance in the Dark, a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many have told me that Dance in the Dark has all the realism of Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the famous bathing suit model murder case. That's great to hear because Dance in the Dark is filled with suspense, plot twists, and surprises, but at the same time, it's a believable story in the tradition of writers like James M. Cain, Jim Thompson, and Elroy Leonard. Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and Kindle ebook form from Amazon.com, and it's available direct from the publisher emlancey.com as well. If you have a chance, please look for it. If it makes your vacation better, we'll both be happy. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad at Amazon.com or emlancey.com. Thanks for giving it a look. Welcome back, everybody, to America. The Road Chat right now with you. And, we're so glad you're with us. We do appreciate it. We have a terrific guest. Friend of the program now, I think Jim Owens, brand manager for Mustang, is a friend of the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
I feel blessed to be considered a friend of the program. And as we were talking earlier, I really do enjoy sitting down talking cars with you.
Well, I appreciate that. And we have a very cool car to talk about, right? The next generation Mustang for 2024. Where do you want to begin, Jim?
I'm just so excited. I mean, as you know, I've been around Mustang for a while, right? I got the opportunity to work on Gen 4, help launch Gen 5, Gen 6, now Gen 7. I've been blessed for the last 23 years to be doing something that I enjoy and love. I love working with an audience that is willing to tattoo their pony onto their body in some way, shape, matter, or form. And this car is going to give people more of the opportunity to want to do that. Mm-hmm. We're really excited about it. For me, you know, I'm normally the throaty, gurgly engine guy, right? And the engines with the 480 on the fourth generation Coyote and the all-new EcoBoost with, you know, 315, 350. You know, normally I think you've talked with me long enough that might be my first go-to.
Maybe.
However, this time, because we want to take the seventh generation Mustang to that new customer. So like people my age and, you know, who love the 60s fondly from those cars, have something for them to look forward to continue it. And I really think like Craig Sandovig and Justin and the team did a great job on that interior technology. And we walked you through it. It was,
very impressive and very non-traditional, right, for Mustang.
Very non-traditional. And that was literally, I think I told you, I sat with Mike Levine the first time we opened it up. I sat for 50 minutes in there playing with it, like legitimately. Now, it's not how I would personalize my car, right? But when I get in and do it, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like the younger kids would, you know, personalize their technology and they'll go about doing it. But like I actually
personalizing your home screen on your phone,
yeah.
You know, making that stuff happen. That's what it's all about, is making it your own. And there's no reason you couldn't modify the car in other ways.
Oh, yeah. Either. Put on a blower and stripes wheels and brakes. But that was my favorite new thing as it relates to, you know, bringing in a future audience. I think you've spoken with Chris and that edgy, sexy design that they've done. I think they really did a good job with the making it unmistakably Mustang and still looking fast, standing still, which I like. And then that haunch, you know, where you get the low center of gravity and it looks it feels powerful.
It's a difficult thing to pull off. To be both modern and Mustang, right? When you have a car with this kind of heritage, that many generations, and everybody knows what a Mustang looks like. That's a tough one.
And they really pulled different pieces from each of it. I mean, you know, the shirts we're wearing have all seven generations like listed on the back of it. So there's a little chunk and piece of everything, including Mustang 2, that is in that vehicle that makes it that way. But Chris and the team were able to pull that forward in an edgy and sexy way. That, you know, people, when we sit in the Mustangs, right, we're not a hey, look at me type crowd, right? That's not why we do it. Although you do stop at the stoplights and look at you.
People look
it's
old.
More, hey, I make this car look good,
right? sometimes the car makes me look good.
But they did that in that design that I think really will attract that younger generation. And, you know, that's what I'm excited about doing, you know, carrying it forward, you know, bringing it forward.
Right. Kind of three flavors to this, two of which we drove today and the day before. Walk us through that a little bit.
So, EcoBoost and GT, and then obviously the Dark Horse, which is our first new nameplate since Bullet, if you can believe, in Gen 4 that we brought in. You know, we've gone back historical, GT350, 500, Mach 1, Boss 02, California Special. You know, we've gone backwards. This was the first new one from a performance derivative standpoint. Very unique exterior appearance on each of them. Kind of reminds me of the old, like, Fox Body 5-liter LX that looked a little different, right? Yeah. So I think they did a great job on that. The power and performance and the fun stuff, right? When you go into track apps, you know, you get track apps on your 100A entry EcoBoost, you know, all the way through your 700A Dark Horse. That's core and through, along with that center screen and the center stack that we talked about in the instrument cluster. Those go all the way through. But then, you know, the heart and soul changes a little bit. When you were driving that 315 horsepower up through the mountains there, you could feel it kind of torquey at 350
foot-pounds nice,
of
strong torque. Stuff, yeah. Torque.
That performance package that goes through all three of them, right? Like, you know, from the braking system, that six-piston, you know, big Brembo brakes and the bigger rear calipers and rotors, the four-piston calipers that are on the performance package, that can go all through. Then you get the differences in there, right? Like the, you know, the different unique front grille, right? The upper, and not lower, but like the way that it looks different. Really excited, three different flavors. All of them are performance oriented, and some of them just do a little bit different things for each other. But you know, my favorite is still the GT.
Yeah, who is the as mine is, but I'm an old guy and I like big V8 engines, you know, with a ton of torque, and I like a manual transmission, which is available in the GT too. But talk a bit about who the buyer is. Is it simple enough to say the EcoBoost is a younger buyer, or is it more nuanced than that?
No, I think it is more nuanced than that. And we have the studies where we break it down by the generational cohorts. And as you can imagine, Boomer and Trailing Edge Boomer and Gen Xer are still the large proponents of it. As you go down in EcoBoost, you do get a little bit younger. You do get a little bit more inclusionary, right? It's the audience that's out there. So if you think about it, it's not demographic, right? Mm-hmm. And I like to use the word, it's psychographic.
Psychographic, right? Yes, it's in their heads.
It is that common thread of an expression of freedom, you know, what that freedom of the open road. So from you go Cooper convertible or EcoBoost, I almost said V6, EcoBoost or GT,
right.
You know, or Dark Horse. The Dark Horse doesn't have the convertible, but it's a freedom of expression and how do you choose to express that common thread?
Yeah.
The focus groups when we did for the HMI stuff, you know, for the younger audiences, they were like
the human machine interface.
Sorry, yes. the center stack and yeah, the center console. When we did the focus groups there, the was a broad base demographically. The younger audiences were more like, oh, it's about time, and oh, cool, that's like the Rocket League or Forza game. And one of the heritage based customers, people like me, actually said, I think you could shoot a rocket from this thing, right?
Right.
So it's to me, to your question, the difference in the customers, yeah, there's a broad range of demographics on there, but it is more how do you want to display your passion and energy behind driving that kind of will push you to the different choices in there, which right. is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things you've done this time around is the drift brake thing. Talk about that.
That is so fun. Vaughn, and back in 2011, we were up at the Proving Grounds, the Michigan Proving Grounds, not Dearborn. So we were up there, and we brought a Raptor out there. We had Haley Deegan's dad. I can't believe I can't come up with his first name. Race off-road racer, famous person. Anyways, he was out there in what was basically a World Rally type car. And then Vaughn came up in his drift car and his Mustangs, and he just goes, Jim, you're untrainable. Like, we tried and tried and tried to get me to do it. Focus RS, we had all-wheel drive, torque vectored in the drift mode. I really kind of learned on here. Here, having Vaughn and Chelsea and the RTR team, working with our engineering team, developing a drift brake in a pre-title car represents the fun that we want Mustang
right.
fans to have, from line lock and launch control and rev match and no lift shift and the active exhaust. And, you know, now you add in the drift brake. Those aren't things that you need to get to your local Kroger.
Right, right.
But those are the things that you can do that make it fun when you're doing, you know, when you want to do something with Mustang. Mustang has those fun characteristics, and that adds to that level, and yeah. we're excited about it.
Well, and just driving the GT, as I did this morning, minutes ago, I got out of it. In a lot of ways, it's easy to look at that vehicle as being kind of retro and, you know, V8 engine and all that and manual transmission, because I had glommed onto a manual transmission model. But that's got a lot of tech stuff on it too, right? Talk about that.
Yeah, so the technology with the new available MagnaRide suspension, right? It's new hardware and new software. You know, that's a viscous fluid that has medical particles in it that you shoot electric to change the rebound aspect of it. That technology is incredible. The drift brake itself is an electronically controlled and actuated drift brake. And then when you're not in the drift mode, it's actually just functions as your parking brake with a separate parking prong on there.
Yeah. Rev matching in the manual transmission.
I love the rev matching. Yeah. No lift shift I still have trouble with, but, you know, rev matching that you get, like, you know, I'll give up the heel toe. You know, I have a very broken apart clutch that they welded back together for me that sits in my living room. My girlfriend's not all that happy about it, but it's a clutch sitting there. Right. That I can give up the heel toe because the computer helps matching the output speed along with the wheel speed so you don't get that hop much better than my heel toe in the seat of my pants can do. No lift shift, that's on the Dark Horse. It was on Mach 1 as well. I have trouble, having done so long, you know, clutch goes in, lift up on the gas, and then you go back in. Yeah. Like, I can't tell my foot to stay
on the gas, yeah.
Again, great technology that is fun, that is, you know, core into the soul of Mustang.
Right. Well, terrific. Jim Owens, thanks so much for being with us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for allowing me to be enjoying this conversation, and hopefully your listeners do as well.
Yeah. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back, right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road, and it is the time when we answer questions from our listeners, and we appreciate the questions. We have a very intelligent audience, I think, Chris. They ask very intelligent questions, and we love answering their questions, or giving it our best shot anyway. We've been doing this for a while now, so we kind of know a little bit about cars and the car industry, and can help people out. It's easy to get your question to us. Send it to editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com, and we'll answer your question on an upcoming show. And Benjamin did just that. Benjamin in Oceanside, California, asks this. Is August a good time to buy a new car? It seemed like the end of the summer used to be considered one of the best times to get a good deal. But is that still true today?
Oh, well, that's a very tough question to answer now that prices are still kind of all over the map, Jack. Although I will say prices are kind of leveling, although they remain elevated from a few years ago before we started the pandemic and everything went sideways. You know, I'm not a car dealer, Jack, so I'm going to actually push this one back to you, but I do want to make a statement, and I would like to get your opinion on it. The new model year vehicles that are rolling out around this time of year typically put pressure on, downward pressure on the prices of previous model year vehicles. So that could be a contributing factor to why people think it's a great time to buy a car. And if that's the case, then go for it, I think.
Yeah, it always was a great time to buy a car. I think less so now, and you identified perfectly the reasons. I mean, inventory is tight. A lot of cars are still selling right as they come off the truck from the factory. So there's not excess inventory on a lot of dealers' lots. And of course, when people have excess inventory, they have a tendency to sell them on at lower prices. I mean, kind of the old supply and demand Adam Smith thing. So it only makes sense that right now in this particular environment, probably not as big a thing. Of course, the model year has changed too. When you and I were kids, it was different eras, but both times when we were kids, the model year was a big deal, and the model year would start maybe October 1st. I think officially it starts October 1st in the industry. So late summer into September, you could get some pretty good deals on cars if you didn't mind getting a car that was going to be a year old in a month. You had to figure that in too, but I think less so now. So Benjamin asked a good question. I don't think it's maybe as good. It's certainly not a bad time to buy a car. And I think the longer you wait right now in this inventory situation, we're just going to see more inventory piling up. So probably be an even better time to buy a car.
Yeah, we always say the time to buy a car is when you need one, because when you're desperate, things start to get a little hard to negotiate. So
right. And you don't want to be desperate out there, or you certainly don't want to act desperate in the dealership. Let them act desperate. They need to sell a car. You don't need to buy one. That's my simple advice. Well, here's a question from Theo in Suttons Bay, Michigan. Suttons Bay, Michigan actually is a beautiful place up in northern lower Michigan. I bet this time of year it's just spectacular up there, but here is the question. I heard you guys talking about two-seat sports cars last week, and I started to wonder about it myself. If you were going to buy a sports car right now, what would it be?
Ooh. Well, I got to tell you, and we just heard the great interview. I think the new Mustang Dark Horse looks pretty impressive. If I were going to go out and spend, I don't know what they're going to cost, but that kind of money. I think after that, Jack, I might look towards something German, but that's just, you know, me being the nerd that I am. What about you?
Yeah, there's so many choices here. And if you want to go pure two-seat sports car, there's a lot of great ones. I mean, certainly the current generation Corvette is super cool.
Mustang is four seats, sorry.
Yeah, it's just crazy cool. And if you want, the Miata is always the answer, right? I mean, you've said that on the show, and it's absolutely true. I mean, hard to go wrong with that. There are the twins from Subaru and Toyota that are fun cars, coupes, two-seat sports cars. And then, as you say, last year the Camaro. You know, how about a Camaro convertible to say goodbye? You know, that would be a super cool vehicle.
The ZL1's still a compelling car.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's a ton of good stuff out there. These days, so many people are buying crossovers, buying large SUVs that probably get a pretty good deal, I think, on something like a two-seat sports car. So I would look to something like that and probably find yourself something that's very, very, very neat.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think without blowing the bank on some of the German options that I mentioned, the Camaro, I think, is a fantastic choice, especially if you want to get one with gas. The new Mustang's coming out, like I said earlier. The Miata is still always the answer, and it's ridiculously affordable for what you get out of it. I mean, it's more expensive now than before, but still a great choice.
And I would say, as much as I like the 2024 Mustangs, maybe a 2023 Mustang, you could drive a really nice deal on that. Not all that much different, not 100% different than the 2024. So a Mustang GT or something like that, a GT convertible maybe. I happen to like drop tops, but you know, coupes are nice too. Mm-hmm. Might be the time to look.
I agree with that.
Well, here's a final question here, and this is from Ted. He's in Plano, Texas. Ted says, I'd like to buy a new car, but I'm frustrated that I can't buy it online. It seems like you can buy almost anything else in the world with just your computer, but it's almost impossible to buy new cars that way. Why is that? And is that going to change?
Why is that? Well, those are probably the complicated dealer franchise laws that we have in this country. And if it's ever going to change, I don't know. That I will say automakers, a lot of them have expressed a desire for it to change, much to the disappointment of their dealer networks, I guess I will say. But, you know, I can't say, Jack, I would like to have both. I would like to have the choice to buy a car online, but I also acknowledge that dealers need to be there to answer questions, to service the vehicles, and so on. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you can buy a car direct from a couple of manufacturers these days. I think certainly Tesla, Polestar, Rivian, those kind of vehicles. The electrics are going a direct route, and it's an interesting way to go. What they miss is all the advantages that dealerships provide to the manufacturer, which is they're the customer of the manufacturer, so they can take some pressure off the inventory that a manufacturer is putting together. They also advertise the car, sell it. They do a lot of things that manufacturers aren't necessarily expert in, retailing a vehicle, but it's something that they do every day. So that's good stuff. As you mentioned, in virtually every state in the United States, there are franchise laws that protect franchises, like car dealers who have a franchise to sell a particular manufacturer's car. Again, they deserve that protection, I think, because if the manufacturer were to pull their franchise from them, pull the vehicles from them, suddenly they have an investment in nothing, right? I mean, it would be very, very tough. Of course, there's many ways you could use a car dealership now that you couldn't before when there were fewer brands in the marketplace. But I think overall you're protecting a local business very often, although there's certainly big chains of dealerships these days. So, and I think you can also buy online from a dealer in a one-price manner, and it will seem as if you're buying from the manufacturer. That's not a bad solution, is it, Chris?
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I just completed a purchase, this was 2 months ago now, I did everything. I mean, this is a local purchase, but I did everything online. I literally showed up to the dealership, picked up the keys, signed one piece of paper, and that was it. That was the experience. And that to me is relatively painless. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, but the dealership provided a service there. They facilitated the purchase, even though I still had to show up in person.
Well, I think there's many good ways to buy a car. I enjoy dealing with a dealership. I think a hybrid experience in which you talk with a dealership. Maybe you go online to begin with, sort a lot of things out, do a lot of the paperwork online, and consummate the deal in the dealership, do a test drive, something like that. That's a nice combination. So I think there's a lot of good ways to buy a vehicle these days. And, you know, varied ways. People are varied. Why not buy a car in a varied way?
Sure.
Well, tell us about what's the latest at yourtestdriver.com, Chris.
Yeah, Jack, we have a review from Kristen Shaw up on the site today. It's the new Alfa Romeo Stelvio. We have another one from her coming later this week for the Jeep Grand Cherokee L. We're also going to be running a new giveaway this month, Jack. I've got it right here. I don't know if we can put it on camera. It's the ThinkWear dash cam. We're going to give this away. Wow, I'm going to put an article up tomorrow explaining what you have to do. It's going to be super easy and pain-free, I believe.
Pain-free, I like that. And, you know, somebody's going to win something really nice. So go to yourtestdriver.com. So much good information there. Check it out. If you're checking things out, you can go to Amazon and check out my latest book, which is called Dance in the Dark. It is a crime thriller inspired by true crime. And I say it doesn't have anything to do with cars, but it kind of does. There's actually some pretty interesting car chases in the book. I want to see the movie version of this because I know those are going to be very, very cool car chases. So check that out. And it's a good summer read, so look for that. Back to America on the Road. If you like our show, please pass it on. We'd love you to turn somebody else on to the wonders of listening to Chris Teague every week. It would be terrific. Listen to this radio station, of course, every week. Let people know where you listen to the show and what time. We're also available as a podcast, aren't we, Chris?
Yeah, on the sportsmapradio.com website, you can find our show on the Saturday morning schedule right there along all the other shows. And you can also find a formatted radio version of our podcast next to the podcast on all the major platforms.
Right. So look for America on the Road on your favorite podcast outlet. And that would be terrific. And we're so glad you're with us here on America on the Road. And we'd love to have you join us again next time for the next edition of America on the Road. Hi, this is Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road. I'd like to tell you about my latest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many people have told me it is the perfect follow-up to Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the notorious Hollywood bathing suit model murder case. In Dance in the Dark, Jason Griffiths is a rock and roll drummer turned computer programmer who fears for his life, but he doesn't know why. After living a quiet life for years, suddenly his girlfriend leaves him. He meets the most beautiful woman he has ever seen, and within days, he's wanted for the murder of a drug cartel enforcer, a murder he didn't commit. The cops think he did it, though, and so does the boss of the cartel, so he's stuck between the law and the mob with nowhere to turn. The only person who might be able to help him is the new woman in his life. But will his stunning new companion be an asset or an enemy? And can he escape the desperate situation he's trapped in? Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and as a Kindle ebook at Amazon and at E.M. Lancy Publishers. Right now, it's at a special low price that will save you $5. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad. Thanks for checking it out.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.